Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. So I love D. Mace, and I love Chris Sanders, and I don't agree with everything that they say or do, and I'm sure they don't agree with everything that I say or do, but I do love having them on the show, and I love doing the pregame show, and I love their insight. And I love it because they played the game. In the case of D. Mace, he was an all-pro Tennessee Titan. Plus, he's like here, he gets it here, so on and so forth. And it doesn't mean that everything he says is gospel. And again, there are tons of things he says that I disagree with. But there is an insight that he has, which is that of a former player. And I'll never forget, either he or Chris said something one time, and I almost drove my car off the road. And the next day, I told the GM during the show, during a commercial break, I said, you know, I heard Derek say this, or I heard Chris say this, and I almost drove my car off the road. And he looked at me and he goes, oh yeah, players don't know. And then he used a word you can't use on the radio. And he said, they know what they used to do. So he goes, if I wanted to know about receiver play, especially in the slot, Derek would know. He goes, that's what he would be. They know it through and through. He says, we never spent time teaching Derek what the right guard is supposed to do. So that's why, again, if you listen to Derek, he'll talk about deferring to Trevor when it comes to the offensive line. But the one thing that I never overlook is Derek's understanding of the dynamics inside of the locker room. And so yesterday, after Will Levis had cost the Titans a second straight game to start 0-2, D. Mace, of all people, when everybody's saying it's just one mistake, it's just one game or two games in, everybody chill out, it'll be okay, give Levis more time, D. Mace wasn't hearing that.
I just want to know from Titans fans, when is enough enough? Because, again, you're saying give him a little bit more time. How much more time do you need to give him? Honestly, that's a real question. It's like, how much time do you want to see Will Levis underneath center and making these same mistakes that he's made, not just this year, but he made them last year as well? So how much longer do you want him underneath center? Because the longer it seems like he's underneath center, it seems like the more he's going to make these types of mistakes. Again, if you've listened to this show, which I know you have over the last 2 weeks, I'm not saying, you know, throw Will out with the bathwater. Hey, if you want to give him an opportunity to redeem himself, go ahead and do it. But I just want fans to know that the longer they continue to stick with him and the more Will Levis continue to do these same things, the more you're going to lose this locker room. The more guys are going to be looking at you as the head coach or the offensive coordinator, or the GM, like, y'all brought in a backup for a reason, a guy that has won games in this league, that has led his team to a playoff for a reason. Use him, because it seems like this is not working. That's what it's about, doing what's important for the franchise. And starting Will Levis may be the best thing for the franchise, but if it doesn't change, that's what I'm saying. If this doesn't change, how long is too long for fan bases? Because the same person that called and said, give them a little bit more time, if they lose these next two games, you're going to be looking to say, yeah, it's about time to bench him.
I mean, he made his feelings pretty well known there. And again, I go back to the insight. I go back to the locker room, where I've never been a football player in the NFL. And I can assume how a football player would feel, but I'm not sure that I really have the basis of knowledge to say, hey, they may lose the locker room over Will Levis because they look at Mason Rudolph and they say, hey, you know, Mason Rudolph, he might be a better option. He might. Every time a microphone is in front of a Titan player, they will say, Will Levis, we believe in him. He's done a great job. We know it's only two games. We're close. But what do they actually think? And I don't know. And again, Derek doesn't know exactly how Calvin Ridley feels, but who do you think has a better chance of understanding how Calvin Ridley would feel? Me, you, or Derek? And the answer's Derek. And he basically said, all right, fans, how long you want to go? How long, how much more time do you want to give Will Levis? Because if you keep waiting on it, you might lose the locker room. And Derek said, hey, a little bit of a warning here that while I think, you know, hey, there's the bye in a couple of weeks and they can wait for this and they can wait for that. And they can, Derek says, don't wait too late.
But now, if they lose the next two games, you're out of it. You're completely out of it. Because I don't think even putting Mason Rudolph in the game, I'm not sure that he can climb, that he can dig you out of the hole that you dug yourself with the help of the quarterback, with the help of special teams, with the help of other areas on your team. I'm not sure he's going to be able to dig you out of that hole.
I mean, it sounds to me, again, I don't want to put words in his mouth, Ian, but it sounds to me like he'd be in favor of benching Will Levis.
I mean, maybe. Yeah. Sounds like,
I mean, it sounds to me like he's telling you, hey, if you don't bench Will Levis and you lose, you're going to lose the locker room and the season's going to be over. That's what I get out of that. And you can argue with D-Mace all you want. Call their show tomorrow between 11 and 2 o'clock. And you can argue with him if you want. I'm not arguing with him. I understand exactly what he's saying. Now, I wouldn't bench Levis if I were the coach, but I feel like I need to understand where Derek is coming from. And it's the mindset of the guys in the locker room. I keep holding this firm belief. That is, if you think the Titans' defense is elite, if you think it is a defense that is elite, that could carry a team through the playoffs, make the change. Because you are 2-0, in my opinion, if Mason Rudolph is your quarterback. And I don't even think Mason Rudolph is good, but I do think Mason Rudolph can manage a game. All you needed in week one and week two was a game manager. Kerry Collins in 2008 was a game manager. And he, I don't even think he threw for 3,000 yards that year. And he managed you to 13-3 because Albert Haynesworth and Kyle Vandenbosch and Keith Bullock and Chris Hope and Cortland Finnegan led a dominant defense coached by Jim Schwartz. It's doable. We see it all the time. Minnesota got to the NFC title game with Case Keenum as their starting quarterback. And if you listen to Robbie and Joe, Mason Rudolph's great and Case Keenum sucks. So the point here is, Derek's telling you, Brian Callahan, that if you don't consider making a change and this team loses, it might be too late. And you might lose the locker room. And again, I'm not saying whether or not Derek is right or Derek is wrong. And I'm sure there are some people, even maybe Brian Callahan. And I'm not putting words in his mouth either. But, I mean, I'm sure there are some guys that are like, oh, no, they won't lose the locker room. You know, if he makes a bonehead, we'll pull him out. We'll put in the next guy. And, you know, if not, they understand this is a business and they got to do what's in the best interest of the team. And Brian Callahan was on that Bengals team in 2019 that tanked when they put Ryan Finley in at quarterback and all of that. But I'm just telling you what he said. And he would have more of an understanding of how these things work inside the locker room than you would, than I would, and even more so than Brian Callahan would. So just keep that in mind. And make of that what you will. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. What about the owner? Willie had a great question today for Tim Hasselbeck. About maybe if you were to make the move to Rudolph, how do you sell the owner on it? I do think that's important, what Tim Hasselbeck had to say. We'll do that in your phones. We'll do it next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
How much confidence do you have in Levis?
I got plenty of confidence in Will. I believe in everything he's done so far, and we just got to keep working to get better. And he's made some mistakes that are costly, and I think he's learning from them. It's a painful lesson, and there's things that I'm learning about him that are helping me call the game better for him. And, you know, we're just going to keep at it, and there's really nowhere else to go but keep fixing mistakes and then trying to go win a football game. So that's ultimately where we're at, and I believe in Will and what he's capable of. And I thought his improvement this week was good, obviously the error aside, but there's been a lot of things he's gotten better at this week that I was – happy with and pleased with.
There you go. That was Brian Callahan talking about Will Levis. Doesn't sound like a benching is in the offing anytime soon. Adam Schefter saying, you know, I think it'd be a little bit before they'd make that move. And D. Mace is like, all right, well, you might lose the locker room if that happens. Tim Hasselbeck was on the Midday Show today, and they asked, you know, hey, Amy highlighted Will Levis when she fired Mike Vrabel, and they hired Brian Callahan for Will Levis. And so, I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, how do you convince her two games in, even with the boneheadedness, if you wanted to make a change? Here is what Willie asked Tim Hasselbeck.
It might be a tough sell, especially to Amy Adams Strunk, who basically hired Brian Callahan to try to bring out the best in Will Levis. It would not look good to scrap it after two games. So could you sell this, Tim? I'm taking a step back with my young guy. I want to see what it looks like with the other guy, but my full intention is to bring him back in as the starter down the road after a game or two. It's a tough sell. I wonder how the owner would take that, knowing how much of a wild card the owner is. But could you sell that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you could sell a plan. Like, hey, this is what we're doing. We're not turning the page, but like this is our plan. Like, we're not scrapping it. We still believe in him. We're still going to develop them. But like, sometimes we do think it's necessary in extreme situations to take a step back and watch someone from the sideline. Like, I wouldn't be the first person that like had that idea for the development of a quarterback. But I also, like, I would argue, you know, that you get better by doing it and making the mistakes.
Okay. Here's what I'll say to that. And again, Tim's a coach, and Tim played quarterback in the NFL, and I didn't. But here's what I would say to that. If you bench him, you're done. And I use the Carolina Panthers as an example. I think what happened in Carolina is the owner hauled off and had to blame somebody for why they suck so bad. And he's blaming the quarterback. Because last year he blamed the coach and he blamed the general manager, and now he's blaming the quarterback. Now, I haven't seen anything from Carolina to have an opinion as to tell you whether or not Bryce Young is or is not the problem. What I would tell you when it comes to Carolina is I would tell you that I think the owner is very irrational, and when the coach keeps saying Bryce is our guy, it rings kind of hollow, because if Bryce was your guy, you'd be playing Bryce. Well, I haven't seen the highlights, or I should say the lowlights, that Will Levis has put out there surrounding Bryce Young. Maybe they exist. I don't know. I haven't watched, but I assume that it probably hasn't been as bad. If you make the move, you make the move. If you make the move, you've given up on Levis. Personally, I wouldn't be making the move. But I also don't care if they go the other way. Like, if they turn around and decide, you know what, we're giving up on Levis and we're moving on, I'm not going to fight it. Because, again, Blake Bedingfield, who I have a ton of respect for, this is the guy, when he was the director of college scouting, who convinced the Titans to draft Derrick Henry. And he was rewarded for that by being fired. But he convinced them to draft Derrick Henry. This guy wrote today at Kaharsky's website that Will Levis reminds him of Blaine Gabbert. That's right. Blaine Gabbert, who stinks. So, I mean, it's funny because I think Rex Ryan, Ian, I think Rex Ryan's been listening to the morning show, because he went on TV and said, "You ain't Brett Favre." Yep. And I know that last week Joe was talking about, "Well, you know, Brett Favre." And I'm like, I wonder if Rex, when he's around town driving, hears Joe. And Rex Ryan's like, "Dude, you ain't Brett Favre."
I have to address Joe Rexroad on the TV here.
I do not believe that he, like, I never bought this whole, like, well, Brett Favre did crazy stuff. Yeah. When did Brett flip it to the other team to up by one in the fourth quarter kind of thing? So if you make the change, I'm not upset about it. But let's all be in agreement here. And I love Tim saying, well, you could sell the owner on a plan, and you could, if you make the change, you make the change. If you make the change, you're done. Now, you can go back and play him, but you're not playing him as your starting quarterback. Like, the idea that Levis is your franchise quarterback, it's gone. Which, again, it's gone for me anyway, so I don't care. But I would just say it's not as simple as, oh, no. You know, we still believe. We just think you need to sit here and watch for a little bit. That never ends well. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025, here on our program. One texter says, hey, Amy, and our phone lines are by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Hey, Amy, I know Will didn't do these dumb things under the last coach, but since I got here, he has gotten dumber and I can't fix him. Yeah, I bet that would go over great. So I do believe that Will Levis did a bunch of dumb stuff last year. Now, was it as glaringly stupid as the two mistakes that he made in the last 2 weeks? No. But I keep going back to the Pittsburgh game. You know, sometimes I think I say things and people, like, you probably don't remember the Pittsburgh game. And I understand it. I had a friend of mine who, you know, my friend that I went to high school with, her dad, I've known him forever. And he's a neurosurgeon. And he said to me he's a neurologist, which I assume is kind of the same thing. And he said to me one time, he's like, man, how do you know the stuff you know? And I'm like, this is my job. He's like, I know, but it's just there's so much detail. And I'm like, I know. And when you're doing neurology, I'm looking up Alexander Carrier's contract. Like, that's what I do. So you kind of probably remember the Pittsburgh game last year, but you probably don't remember the details of it. I do. And I remember at the end of the game when Will Levis was out there literally playing hero ball. He was trying to win the game in the fourth quarter on one throw. And DeAndre had to, you know, bat a pass away from a defensive back, and a Pittsburgh guy dropped a ball, and a Pittsburgh guy intercepted a ball. And it was like, you can't do that. The next week against Tampa Bay, he starts doing the same thing, and Tim Kelly takes the ball out of his hands and starts calling bubble screens for Kyle Phillips. Because at that point, Tim Kelly's like, I do not trust you to make a good decision, so I'm going to lead you to water. You're going to do what I say, even though it doesn't give us much of a chance to win the game, because I don't trust your decision-making. And again, I don't think that was the wrong thing to do for Tim Kelly. So he had traces of moron stuff last year. But he was a rookie, and we could say, oh, he's a rookie, it'll be okay. Kind of what they're probably saying in Chicago about Caleb Williams. Oh, he's a rookie, it'll be okay, it'll be, you know, it's fine, oh, yeah. So, again, I'm just saying, like, I don't think it's like, oh, well, the Vrabel's coaching staff coached him up well. That I'm not sure I totally believe in. Craig says, even if you have given up on Levis, why put Rudolph in? The only thing he is capable of is winning you enough games to not pick a quarterback at the top of the draft next year. We have a similar thought, which is, I say we don't win for Quinn, that being Quinn Ewers at Texas, who I do like. I mean, I haven't studied Quinn Ewers, but I would say
he keeps getting hurt.
I like Quinn Ewers. I also saw some of the highlights of Arch the other day. A boy can play now. I mean, he's big and fast.
On the Titans? Oof.
Oh, goodness gracious. For whatever that's worth.
Well, there are people who want to put in Mason Rudolph because they believe this is a good roster. And yeah, the only thing holding them back is the quarterback.
Well, I keep telling you, it's the defense. If you think the defense is elite, if you think you can win because of your defense, make the change. You know, a lot of people don't know. Do you guys remember the old quarterback, Tony Banks? You know, Tony Banks, the Ravens went like 6 weeks in 2000, the year that they won the Super Bowl. They went like 6 weeks where they didn't score a touchdown. And I remember there was a highlight that was run. You know those random Subway commercials where they say, like, this Subway play of the last week was Justin Herbert with an 85-yard touchdown pass to Josh Palmer. That's the Subway play of the week, or whatever it is. I remember there was one when it was like, the Ravens haven't scored a touchdown in 5 weeks, but they did last week when quarterback Tony Banks threw an interception returned for a touchdown by Titans linebacker Randall Godfrey. And that was a game the Titans went on the road against that Ravens defense, and they beat Baltimore. Rodney Thomas, may he rest in peace, caught the game-winning touchdown pass. But they went on the road, they beat the Ravens, and at that point, Brian Billick said, enough's enough, and he put Trent Dilfer in. If you think this defense is that good, and I do not, then you go to Rudolph. That's what I would say there. A lot of people are bringing up the blocked punts. I mean, I would just say when it comes to the blocked punts, even with those, if Levis doesn't piss away the game, you still win. But on the blocked punt front, if they don't block the first punt in the Chicago game, you win. And I would just say that, to me, it's three strikes and you're out. If another punt gets blocked, whoever is responsible for that gets cut, and I think you fire the special teams coach. And if I was Brian Callahan, I'd make it clear as day to Cole Anderson, one more and you're out. Because at some point you can say it's inexcusable and unacceptable, but when you keep accepting it, then you know then it is acceptable. So I think the block punt, to me, that's a simple. They block another one this year, you're out, period. And I think this is where, again, you know, Brian Callahan is a really nice guy, and he says he's got that mean streak in him, and he can put his foot down. Let's see. Let's see if another punt gets blocked and he doesn't fire the special teams coach. And I'm not saying he should fire the special teams coach today. I am saying that if he did, I'd understand. But if another one gets blocked, he's fired, period. And there's no discussion about it, in my opinion. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. A lot of you want to weigh in on this. Plus, boy, a lot of Titan fans got really, really mad at me last night. And I'm not sorry about it. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063, The Game.
There's a lot of conversation about the big guys on this Titans defense, but Harold Landry had two sacks in this last game against the Jets, and he kind of continues to be this presence within the defense. What does he contribute?
Just that. I mean, there's a when you have an edge rusher that gets production on the quarterback, and then you have two interior players that are difficult to handle, and then Arden has done a really nice job in his role. It affects the way that the quarterback feels. I mean, we all know that when the quarterback feels pressure and they get hit, they don't like it. And Harold's done a really good job of producing on the quarterback. And a lot of one of the sacks this week and one of them last week was really because of the unselfishness of Jeff Simmons' rush. You know, they're in a game, and all Jeff's job to do is just to occupy and penetrate vertically, and Harold's looping, and Harold does a great job finishing the loop. And finishing on the quarterback, but a lot of that's because there's other guys working to help get them open. Just like on offense, when your receivers are running around out to clear space, just clearing space so Harold can go rush. And I think that's what makes that unit really good, is they're all really unselfish.
There you go. That was Brian Callahan. And yesterday I criticized Jeffrey Simmons, because when I got my team yearbook at the game on Sunday, it had Jeffrey Simmons' picture on there along with Calvin Ridley and Will Levis and I think Legarius Sneed was on there, and I think there's somebody else. I can't remember who else was on there. But Harold Landry was not. And I said, where's Harold Landry? He's the one getting the sacks. He's got three sacks so far this year. Where's Harold Landry? He's the one hitting the quarterback. Simmons has no sacks, no quarterback, no sacks, no tackle for losses, and no quarterback hits. Oh, my God, did the boo-hoo crew on Twitter cry about it all last night, Ian.
Yeah, I guess that sounds about right.
Just crying, 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 and crying.
Not our boy Kinston.
No, Kinston's actually on our side on this one. Thank you, Kinston. And the concept is what Brian Callahan said, which is the reason Harold Landry is getting the sacks is because of Jeffrey Simmons.
Okay? Well, it did look like on that one, I guess it was it the Bears game? Or I think he took like three offensive linemen with him.
That's fine. But again, when you pay Jeffrey Simmons $23.5 million, are you paying Jeffrey Simmons $23.5 million to get other people sacks? Or are you paying him $23.5 million for him to get sacks? And the answer, and I know it's a team game, the answer is you're paying for him to get the sacks. I will never forget. And I love every time this comes up because, again, Simmons has never recorded a 10-sack season in his career. And when Jadeveon Clowney was a free agent, the Titans ended up signing him. And remember, you guys were all on board, and then you weren't. But when Clowney was out there, we would talk about it every day. It was during COVID, and there was nothing going on, and the draft had already passed. So this little nugget that Diana Russini says the Titans are in contact with Jadeveon Clowney would lead to 4 hours of just us talking about it. Floyd kept saying, defensive linemen know that they're paid for sacks. They're not paid for these win rate metrics. They're paid to sack the quarterback. And they know that the difference between an all-pro and a good player are sacks. They know it. And I ask you this when it comes to Simmons. And again, if you wanted to tell me Simmons was a really, really good player, well, if you wanted to tell me Simmons was a good player, period. I'm not arguing that. But if you wanted to tell me that Simmons was an elite player in the class of Chris Jones, well, he's never been that. Chris Jones had double-digit sacks last year, missed all of training camp, and sat out the first game because he wanted a new contract. Chris Jones dominates in the playoffs to where his team wins in large part because of him and Mahomes. Simmons' team's won 6 games over the last 2 years. So somebody help me out. Again, when they put Aaron Donald in the Hall of Fame, are they going to talk about the sacks that Aaron Donald created? Or are they going to talk about the sacks that Aaron Donald had for other people? Because the answer is, it'll be about the sacks Aaron Donald recorded. If you want to say Simmons is a good player, well, there's a lot of good players on this team. Chidobe Awuzie is a good player. Ernest Jones is a good player. Amani Hooker's a good player. Harold Landry's a good player. There are plenty of good players on this team. But they don't treat Jeffrey Simmons the same way they treat Chidobe Awuzie. They treat Jeffrey Simmons like he's a superstar. Well, if you want to be treated like a superstar, you need to produce like a superstar. And my guess would be, without going back and watching the tape on Aaron Donald with the Rams, I guarantee you Aaron Donald opened up things for other guys. Guarantee it. Just like I guarantee Tyreek Hill opens up things for other guys on that Dolphins team. You know that tight end they have, Smythe? He's really more of a backup. But you want to know why Smythe gets a lot of catches? Because they're worried about Tyreek and Jaylen Waddle. But again, Tyreek still scores touchdowns. Tyreek still gets big yards. Trust me, they double-team him too. If you watch the Justin Jefferson 90-plus yard touchdown last week, you'll see there are two 49er players running with him. You want to know why there are two 49er players running with him? Because Justin Jefferson is always going to have two guys around him. That's what happens when you're a good player. But again, those good players produce. Those good players get big stats. Derrick Henry was the most effective at helping everybody else out the year that he ran for 2,000 yards. A.J. Brown had over 1,000 yards receiving. Corey Davis was right there, just a little bit below. Ryan Tannehill had the best year of his career. The Titans had the second-ranked offense. And Derek still got 2,000 now because he produces. And Derrick Henry on this team was a superstar. Simmons is not. So if you think all of this bull crap about saying, see, look at this one play where Big Jeff opened up a hole for somebody else, is going to make me think that he's a superstar, it ain't going to work. By the way, I don't know this, but who led the Chicago Bulls in assists from 1991 to 1998? I have no idea who it would have been. B.J. Armstrong, John Paxson, Scottie Pippen, Steve Kerr, Ron Harper, I don't know. I can guess off the top of my head who led the Chicago Bulls in scoring. You see what I'm saying? So, enough with the crying. Go make the plays. And if you make the plays, you won't hear me complain. Have you noticed, as much as I talked about L'Jarius Sneed's knees and all the things they said, you haven't heard me talk about Sneed or his knees at all because he's playing. Have you noticed you haven't heard me talk about Tony Pollard and about, you know, I'm not sure if Tony Pollard's any good. No, I know Tony Pollard's good because Tony Pollard produces. The guy who I'm skeptical about is Spears. And that's because even though Spears has showed some nice highlights here and there, Spears has yet to really take over a game in his career. It's a difference. Sean says, Simmons is better than average. That's it. Prove me wrong. I mean, I think he's significantly better than average. But again, significantly better than average and a superstar, I think, are two totally different things. Ben says, elite defenses would get turnovers. This is a patchwork defense, and this roster needed more than one offseason to fix it. You know, I'll say this because a lot of these Titan fans, you know, I feel like there's a certain level of credibility that I feel entitled to because I only spent all offseason complaining about right tackle. And people would tell me, oh, no, Jared Nicholas Petitfrere, a.k.a.
PT.
PT, who has a PT job working for a fantasy football outlet. PT is going to be the guy who's going to come in and Bill Callahan will coach him. And I'm like, you guys do realize PT sucked last year, right? Oh, but Jared, he had the gambling suspension. Right, you do realize that's a bad thing, though, right? Well, yeah, but then he got hurt. Okay, you realize he wasn't that good as a rookie, right? Oh, no, no, Bill Callahan, you'll see. PT gave up according to Next Gen Stats. And again, I really didn't think it was this bad, but it's the stat. He gave up 13 pressures on Sunday. Jermaine Illuminor, who signed for $7 million with the New York Giants, has given up 5 pressures over 2 games. PT gave up 13 in 1 game. So I think I'm entitled to a little credibility here when it comes to the right tackle spot because I only spent the entire offseason talking about it, telling the coach the story, all the things you guys know. And now right tackle's an unmitigated disaster for this team. But nope, all that's happened is I think Jared Stillman just says these things to work people up. No, I say them because they're true. You get worked up because deep down in your heart, you know it's true too, but you want to hold on to the idea that this guy that you love is a superstar. That's the difference. People will say, Jared's just trying to get under Big Jeff's skin. I don't care. He's got me blocked on Twitter. He doesn't see it anyways. He doesn't like me. He's never going to like me. I'm not upset about it. I don't care. And I am not trying to get invited to his parties. And I'll live. It'll be okay. I mean, it's just the amount of crying over it. Don't cry at me. Go get some sacks. Skyler says, Simmons cost the team on Sunday. The late hit on Rodgers was unacceptable. It would have been 3rd and 15. You know, all I remember about that play is I remember Levis got a roughing the passer call earlier in the game, and they showed the replay on the Jumbotron, and I did not see
it was a weak call.
Roughing the passer. And I'm like, that's a weak call. And then I saw that one, and I'm like, well, it's probably going to be a makeup call. And then I saw the replay. I mean, Simmons hit him in the head and grabbed his face mask.
Hand was in the face mask, yeah.
You can't do that. Well, his hand got hit and it
was accidental, okay. But still.
Okay. You can't do that. I mean, it's just, those are the rules. I didn't write them. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025 here on the program. We'll get back to some of your phones. Plus, speaking of my credibility and speaking of the right tackle position with the PT thing, we know I was right about that. There's another one that I just wonder if it's too early to say I told you so. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Second down 9. Darnold getting messy, going deep, and he's got Jefferson. He's got Jefferson. It's a foot race downfield with Brown shifting gears, getting a block. That's 6.
Ian, is it too early for I Told You So's on Sam Darnold?
It's only been 2 weeks, dog.
Is it too early?
Yes.
I mean, I told you all, Sam Darnold. How long have I been on my Sam Darnold kick for? Like 2 years now?
2 years? I don't
Since
know about that.
The end of the Carolina run. That was the end of 22.
I remember, some, you know, you were trying to hype him up this summer. But
I was talking about how, I think it was last year, we got into the whole Sam Darnold versus Tua argument. And Joe and TD and everyone, Sam Darnold. And I just brushed everybody and every single one of you callers and texters. I just brushed every single one of you off. I thought the stupidest thing Arthur Smith did as head coach of the Falcons was not getting Sam Darnold into backup Desmond Ridder last year. They would have made the playoffs with Sam Darnold as the quarterback, and Sam Darnold would be the starting quarterback in Atlanta right now, and they wouldn't have spent $45 million on Cousins, and they wouldn't have Michael Penix, and they've used the eighth pick. But let me just say this. I knew Sam Darnold could be a starting quarterback in this league based upon what he did at the end of his tenure in Carolina. When Tepper stepped out of it, you know, the problem in Carolina is the owner Tepper. When he stepped out of it and fired Matt Rhule, who's a bozo, with DJ Moore at receiver, Darnold played very, very well. Good QBR, they were 4-2, they got back in the playoff race. Everything. If you watched those games, which I did, most people didn't. So I knew that whenever I brought up Sam Darnold, people were just going just thinking of the Jets Sam Darnold, they remember who was coached by Adam Gase. But you know my theory with Adam Gase is he's terrible and Ryan Tannehill's the example. And so now Sam Darnold gets a fair shot. Offensive coach Kevin O'Connell, number one wide receiver in Justin Jefferson. I mean, and now he is producing. And I would love it because Robbie and Joe, you know, they go on their little Beavis and Butthead tangents with, and they did a lot of that when it came to Sam Darnold, especially my Sam Darnold over Tua thing. Forget about the concussions for a second. Ian, Sam Darnold or Tua?
Tua.
Based off of what?
More than two games.
Tua's not beaten the 49ers.
Okay.
Over the last 2 years, Tua has beaten one playoff team.
Okay.
One playoff team. Dallas by two at home. Darnold just beat the 49ers, who might be the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, well,
you,
San Francisco coming off a short week.
Hill.
Short week on the road. Noon
Fat
noon kickoff.
Again, you guys go ahead.
No
pay
McCaffrey.
Tua $55 million.
Debo
pay Trevor
hurt.
Lawrence $55 million. Pay these average guys $55 million. I'll pay Darnold $10 and beat you. And I'm loving me some Sam Darnold.
Not if you don't have that coach in Jefferson.
But I do have him. Vincent is up next on the program. Vincent, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on Simmons. Let's not forget that he gave up. It was either the go-ahead touchdown or the tying touchdown. The running back bounced right off of him. Streaked up the sidelines into the end zone. But anyway.
I don't think Simmons was on the field on that play. But
yeah, he was. He was. He was slamming his hand on the ground because he missed the tackle. But anyway, when are we going to unveil Sweat? I've been waiting on this unveiling of Sweat because that's all we heard all offseason. Oh, he's a dog. He's a dog. When is he going to make
it? I thought Devondre Sweat, Vincent, thank you. I thought Devondre Sweat was excellent in week one. I didn't really notice Devondre Sweat in week two. And I think that the feelings on Devondre Sweat are either like, you know, like that caller or the Devondre Sweat's the best. And I'm like, week one, he was very good. Week two, didn't notice him. All right, that's it for us. We are out of here. The Chase and Big Joe replays next. Stillman & Company. Tomorrow, Will Levis talks again. Let's see if he makes up any players on the Packers. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company. We'll see y'all tomorrow, too.